Welcome to Healthcare Du Jour, where we dish up and digest the latest in healthcare. For the next 30 minutes, sit back as we bring you insight, commentary, and discussion on trending topics to the table, all expertly served up by our host and his guests. Now here's your host, Matt Fisher.
Welcome back, and thank you for joining as we dive into the hottest topics in healthcare. I'm your host, Matt Fisher. On the menu today is Brendan Keeler, head of product at FlexSpa. Brendan, welcome back to the show.
Hey, Matt. It's been a few years, but really glad to be back.
Yeah, no, it's great to have you on again. And I suspect that a lot of people who maybe follow articles or comments online or in various communities are probably pretty familiar with who you are, because I know you're very vocal and great about sharing your knowledge and expertise. But for the folks who maybe don't know you so well, can you just give a little bit of an introduction in terms of who you are and what you do?
Sure, yeah. So hey, everyone. I'm Brendan Keeler. I'm head of product at FlexSpa. Worked my entire career in healthcare technology at Epic, Redox, Zeus Health, and now at FlexSpa, where we provide patient-authorized access to claims data.
So what first got you interested in health technology? And then I also know that you like to comment a lot on interoperability and data standards.
Yeah, I mean, less comment, more shitpost, I guess is the way I would describe it. But I'm a healthcare API guy. I like connectivity, working at Epic. I got staffed to the EDI team, and so working on integrating all the little subsystems that orbited around the Epic implementation I happen to be working on. And then while working there, I moved over to the Netherlands and got to work at a larger scale at interoperability between organizations on Epic's Care Everywhere product. And I thought that was really neat. I thought that was really impactful to sort of try to stitch together all the disparate organizations and not just the applications within an enterprise. So yeah, from moving back to the States in 2018, I dove in head first and started writing about it, started tweeting / Xing, I guess now, about it. It's my hobby and my specialty.
So given that interoperability is your hobby and your specialty, from that time that you were actively involved in it and piqued your interest to now, how have you seen an understanding of interoperability evolve, and how have you seen kind of the systems that enable it evolve?
Yeah, I mean, there's always been health tech, right? There's always been people trying to advance technology in healthcare, and interoperability, like since maybe 2000, since HIPAA has been around. But in the past couple of years, it's become buzzy and hot. I think I really lucked out working on that versus the orders application or the inpatient application at Epic. I got randomly selected by the sorting hat for EDI and thus lucked into what has become a buzzword in a regulatory sense, a buzzword in a venture capital sense. There's tons of appetite for interoperability solutions. Increasing demand from the market for better interoperability, for systems to work together, for the system, not just within an enterprise, but healthcare as a whole to work seamlessly. So yeah, with a lot of interest comes a lot of passion, a lot of new entrants, and the need for sort of education and understanding of the disparate parts, because interoperability is not one homogenous thing. It's not, let me just pass clinical documents back and forth. It's a bunch of disparate workflows. And so solving each of those sub problems is a lot of work. And so, working in different capacities over the years, it's been interesting to work at Redox, at Zeus, at FlexSpa, and help in different ways.
So kind of given the fact that you said it's trying to bring a lot of disparate workflows together, does that mean there are different standards? And if there are different standards, has the industry advanced to drive towards a common framework, or is the government stepping in to kind of set a baseline from that perspective?
Yeah, so a couple of questions, I'm going to tease them out there, but there's disparate workflows, right? Like what a provider needs to do with a payer is different from what a provider needs to do with another provider. And so the idea of like, how do we help those interactions? How do we digitally enable those interactions? That to me is the broadest superset of interoperability. It's like, think of every edge player, pharma, the patient themselves, device manufacturers, lab organizations, and the way that these different parties interact is drastically different. And so it's not, there's no like one blanket solution to say, okay, what a lab system needs to do with a provider, that's different than what a pharmacy needs to do with a payer. And so the end goal is to digitally enable all of those, you know, workflows, the sending of a prescription, the retrieval of clinical data by a provider. All those things need to be accomplished over time. The government has stepped in. There's the Trusted Exchange Framework and Common Agreement. That's one aspect of how they are promoting interoperability. That takes care of a few workflows. Over time, there may be more workflows, but in the broadest sense, there's many things that are going to operate outside of that regulatory blanket. One example is SureScripts and e-prescribing. That's an aspect of interoperability that's like a semi-solved problem. You can go to your provider, you can say, hey, I pick up from this CVS, and you can feel pretty good that you're not going to have to carry a paper prescription with you to pick that up. That's interoperability. That's like one of the you know, not the first interoperability problem solved, but an example of how like a workflow has already been digitally enabled. And so there's many, many, many more that need to be digitally enabled. TEFCA helps with some of them.
So you said that TEFCA helps with some of them. So can you help kind of explain what TEFCA actually is then? You know, and I think it's a great point that you raised that it's a first step of solving some of the problems. It's definitely not the end.
Yeah. So TEFCA is primarily aimed at workflows that are based around clinical data, passing clinical data back and forth in a query-based model. So query meaning I say, hey, Matt, can you give me information? You say, sure, here's that information, rather than you pushing something. That historically, that in the private industry, there have been groups, there have been health information networks at a national scale, such as Care Quality, Commonwealth, that have grown privately to pretty massive scale, 70% of providers, to exchange in a query-based model the clinical data from provider to provider. So there's been like pretty good private industry success at enabling interoperability for this specific workflow, provider to provider, transfer of care. How do we make sure there's enough information when Matt goes from the ER here to the inpatient unit to eventually the skilled nursing facility, hopefully long, long in your future. But that passing between those different parties, Care Quality and Commonwealth did it pretty well, but they hit a wall. Like they've sort of hit a wall of, okay, we've got 70% of providers. We've got Epic, we've got Cerner, we've got Meditech. How do you get the long tail? How do you get all these smaller EHRs, all these smaller players to participate? So TEFCA, so some regulatory incentives, some slight regulatory incentives, because the voluntary network doesn't replace them per se, but it's pretty similar. It's pretty similar to Care Quality from a technical standpoint, at least to start. As a framework for trust to exchange these clinical documents back and forth. So it does that. It sort of copy pastes a lot of Care Quality, and it says, we're going to have stricter rules and regulations around who's joining as a QHIN, a qualified health information network. And when they do, what rules apply to all the participants and sub-participants underneath these qualified health information networks. And so in doing so, Care Quality and Commonwealth, they hit the wall of not being able to penetrate all the providers. They hit another wall of not being able to iterate and add new workflows and add new participants and types of like maybe payers or patients themselves. Care Quality and Commonwealth had very little leverage, very little ways of saying, okay, you have to add this new use case if you still want to play ball. And so with TEFCA and the regulatory incentives, some of those problems potentially go away. Suddenly we say, okay, if you want to play ball, you have to add, you have to allow patients to have access. And maybe in a couple of years, you have to allow payers to have access. So with a few more levers, this improved framework can suddenly, expand who's able to benefit from a pretty broad capability of being able to query and retrieve clinical data. So that's the biggest thing. There is also buried into TEFCA a pretty cool feature of being able to push data. So that wasn't available via Care Quality and Commonwealth. a different network called Direct Trust. That was the push-based network. And it was scaled out to, you know, 1 million providers. Now this unified network where you can pull and push, that's pretty cool. That's a net new capability.
So you were mentioning that there is, you know, some slight incentives to encourage that participation. So what are those? Or could you give some examples of what some of those incentives might be?
Yeah, guilt. Like they're trying to guilt that people. No, just kidding. But so HTI-1 is a rule that's a follow-on to the Cures Act. So the Cures Act comes out 2016. ONC's Cures Rule comes out that does a lot of things, but one of them is sort of established alongside Cures, established TEFCA as an outcome of the Cures Act. HTI-1 is a follow-on rule by the Office of the National Coordinator that says, well, again, a bunch of disparate things, but one of them is updating to what's called information blocking, which is sort of an expansion of some of the HIPAA, you know, the HIPAA rights of patients. And it basically says that these different actors can't, they can't information block and they can't withhold information from the patient or from other parties that should have access to data. It's very vague. It's one of the more vague regulations, but gives a cudgel for people to say, hey, you're information blocking. I'm going to report you and there'll be fines, and to unstick some intransigent data holders or intransigent counterparties. What's interesting is with HTI-1, the ONC said, you know, if you're doing TEFCA, you get kind of not a free pass. They kind of walk this back from the proposed rule, but you get more, there's benefits to you of doing TEFCA in terms of you're being able to respond to information blocking. So that's like a slight incentive. What's interesting is HTI-2. So the ONC, they're in their last year of this administration. There's an election coming up. Anytime you see an election coming up, regulatory bodies are rushing to get things out the door. HTI-2, I guarantee they're rushing right now to get out the door. And we don't know what's in that. It's in review with the OMB, which reviews all the rules, all the regulations. They're rushing to get that out, and buried in there, people are hypothesizing we're going to see things to further incentivize TEFCA. Maybe saying, hey, EHRs, to maintain your certified status as a certified health information technology, you need to be able to support TEFCA. That doesn't mean that every provider will need to turn it on. That would have to really come from the CMS to say, you know, to say to get certain payments under MIPS or something, you need to turn on this capability. But ONC making the capability at the EHR level, at the certified health information technology level, that's going to open the door, one, to providers being able to turn it on, and two, to the CMS saying, okay, now this is required for certain payment incentives. Doesn't mean it's going to happen. We're like reading the tea leaves, but that's what I would expect.
Yeah, no, and I think those are great points, because it's, as you said, once you get kind of the baseline rule established that identifies the desired behavior, then you can get different branches of, you know, HHS really to come out with the enforcement mechanisms. You know, but I think it's also, you know, kind of as you're describing it, that if, you know, there's that slight benefit of the TEFCA participation of maybe it gives you some leniency under the info blocking rules. We've, you know, I think to some degree you're seeing more regulations starting to go in that direction. You know, on the security side, you're starting to see, you've seen, you know, I think proposals that if you meet certain standards, that's going to be to some degree proof that you're complying with HIPAA, at least on the security rule, and might get you away from having an automatic determination that, you know, that you're not complying, that fines could be applied. So it's, you know, kind of incentive, not in the, I guess, a traditional sense where they're going to give you some additional financial benefits so much as you get that, you know, marginal get out of jail free card if they want to come investigate you at some point.
Yeah. And like, that's the first incentive, but like, so long as the administration, there aren't administration changes and we get another, head of the ONC that's like sort of anti-TEFCA, which was, the previous, Dr. Rucker was, and we'll call it say anti-TEFCA, but he's written things for his now company that are expressed that view pretty strongly. If that happens again, maybe we see this slow down. But if we see a Biden win, if Mickey Tripathi is still the head of the ONC, then we'll see continued incentives to help people see the light and get on and reap the benefits, because which I support. Like I'm very much supportive of finding a way to connect all the providers and make sure that we have this, you know, disparate, decentralized way of sharing data to allow and facilitate these different use cases. I think that's really important.
Yeah. And I think, as you're also implying, consistency in and of itself is important, because if you're constantly whipsawing back and forth between extremes, it makes it really hard to operationalize anything, because it costs time and money and other resources to be able to implement or pull back on, you know, any one of these initiatives. And for those of you just joining, I'm talking about Brendan Keeler from Flexpa, and we've been talking about TEFCA. And I kind of want to pick on one of the points you mentioned when you were talking about, you know, some of the components of TEFCA, but one you mentioned are the QHINs. You know, if I'm recalling correctly, it was only recently that ONC actually certified who the initial QHINs are, right?
That's right. Yeah, in December.
So maybe can you just help explain more what the QHIN role actually is? And, you know, even though we're recording early February, has there been any, you know, real world experience with how they're operating and how folks are interacting with them?
Yeah, I mean, most of the QHINs are the successful implementers from the Care Quality Framework. If you actually look, it's like you take this, whatever, there's 15 or 20 or 25 Care Quality implementers, and some of them were quite good and mature and able to handle high volumes of traffic, prove that they're trustworthy and doing things the right way. And be active participants in that framework. They are the ones who are successful in going through the qualification with TEFCA, because there's just more structure. There's more that you have to flow down a lot of things to your sub-participants. You have to be able to handle lots of volume. You have to ensure that you have a board of, you know, of advisors and things that are going to keep things. It's not a purely for-profit industry. I'm kind of parroting it all. It's like there's hundreds and hundreds of documents for TEFCA. And so I forget without reading them over and over again, all the different rules, but just like the weight and burden of that on a QHIN is really, really high, because you're expected, there's going to be a lot of expectations to on you as part of it. It's not something that anyone can trivially jump on and do. And there were bad implementers within Care Quality. There were bad participants in Commonwealth. Because not in the sense they're evil, but bad in the sense that they just weren't very good at it. And so we have those initial ones who are approved. We have others we expect, like I can think of two that from tweeting and getting told, people like, oh yeah, they're going to be approved in the next couple of months. And there'll probably be more after that as people see, oh wait, there's benefits. I think some other implementers who were certainly qualified, certainly able to do this, held back because they're like, is this the right investment at the right time? And that's okay. Like they can jump in, they can go and go through that process and jump in when it's right. Supposing they're able to make it through that qualification.
Yeah. And it definitely makes sense that you want to have organizations that are appropriately structured and set up to handle the important role that they have in, you know, the data infrastructure. I guess from that perspective, and in your opinion, do you think there's maybe an ideal number or ideal capacity for the system? Because it sounds like you probably don't want to have too many, because then maybe you're being spread too thin. And at the same time, you want to have a critical mass so that way they can all support each other.
Yeah, I mean, okay. So the way I think about it is Care Quality and Commonwealth, they have these implementers, these on-ramps to go and they sell to other customers, and maybe those are providers or maybe they're other digital health companies. As that expanded, the accountability and like them really understanding the rules, there's this on ramps that, because of their incentives and other things, we're incentivized to kind of read the rules a little loosely. And so what you see on Care Quality is a decent amount of fraud and abuse. And like, I'm not like, there's no sugarcoating it. There are parties on these networks that are in the strictest interpretation of both HIPAA and the strictest interpretation of the rules of Care Quality, not following them. Like I have a list that I keep of like these groups, these, not the implementers themselves, but their customers, of ones that are distinctly doing patient access, distinctly selling to pharma, distinctly selling to payers. Like my wife received a letter from one of them saying, hey, give us a short phone call and we're going to have all this clinical data for you, which is insane. Like, it's just insane to randomly receive a letter from somebody and then trace it back and be like, wait a minute, they're going and they're retrieving data over these networks. So TEFCA has this high bar because, one, there's going to be a lot of, they want people to really understand these hundreds to hundreds of documents. They ensure, like, you've been tested and you've qualified to doing so. And they're going to hold people accountable in a way that I don't think has been done before. And in doing so, make for a better network.
Yeah, so kind of picking on, you know, those hopefully extreme examples and ones that don't happen too frequently, you know, with this heavy focus on interoperability and, you know, connectivity and networking for data, you know, how are you seeing an impact on privacy and security, since those are topics that are top of mind to a lot of people nowadays?
So TEFCA enable, previous TEFCA, all these networks enable treatment purpose of use, right? There's two things you need to do, really, like, all, like, forget all the other rules and regulations. If you're participating in Care Quality and Commonwealth, you are a provider or a software provider involved in the treatment. So you query and you say, I'm treating Matt. I'm going to pull his information. After you are done doing so, there's reciprocity. You would put your data back onto the network, right? Those are the two things that, like, the two critical values of these networks. And so what is treatment, which has been around since HIPAA, has become questioned over and over. And people are like, well, clinical trials, those are kind of, it's kind of treatment. And sometimes it is, and sometimes it isn't. Sometimes it's done, like, depends on what, like, the actual scenarios. Well, if I have one provider on staff, maybe I can give data to the patient. I can do patient access. So people, like, sort of, no one's, I don't think anyone's intending to be bad. Some people are, but, like, most of them are just, like, bending treatment to do the things that they need to do to the workflows that are underserved today. So TEFCA's big, like, what TEFCA can do is actually make the paved paths for these different workflows. If you enable the payment purpose of use and there's a paved path for it, then abuse, the actual abuse that occurs, is truly just the bad actors. You've removed the good actors who have had no other way. Same thing with individual access. If you give a paved path, which TEFCA does off the bat, then suddenly all these, like, PHRs and other things that are abusing treatment right now on care quality for a good purpose of helping the patient, but they are abusing it, like, suddenly they have a paved path and they'll choose that. It's unless they're a bad actor, unless they say, no, actually, I want to use treatment because it's a little bit easier. Well, then they can be held really, really accountable. But right now, it's really hard to hold a personal health record or a clinical trial or whatever accountable because, one, it's hard to trace and track to audit. And two, it doesn't feel right. You're like, I kind of want the patient to have access to their data. I kind of want these clinical trials, like, to be enabled to help the patient. So, like, that's a tough spot. And, like, that's why TEFCA has to succeed, because the alternative, like, the way that the network's growing, these current networks, and the way that the abuse is happening, not good for privacy, really bad for privacy. And the slippery slope keeps getting slipperier.
Yeah, and that makes sense, because I think, as you're saying, if you have the different paths available and you create a path per justified use case, then you can really tie it down tightly and make sure that people are slotting into the right area. And if you're not, I think, as you were saying, you can really call out, are you doing this to just take advantage of it, or do you really need better educated? Do you need to become better educated so you can understand why you should be on a different path?
Yep. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And I think, as long as we're not, like, for any workflow that is non-digitized, if there's no other option, they're going to choose something and maybe bend the rules. But if there's an option that's available that's correct and right, then most people are going to choose that. And I think that's just the way to think about it. If there's an underserved workflow, people, like, it's like the river finding a way. Like, it's going to, like, carve a different way that you don't want to. So you have to carve the way you want the river to go.
Yeah. So, kind of thinking about everything that you've talked about so far, I know you're really focusing, I think rightly so, on the promise and, you know, the benefits that TEFCA can bring. But what do you think are maybe some of the shortcomings that you hope to see addressed as it continues to evolve?
I mean, right now, it launched with treatment, so copy paste of care quality. It launched with CDA document standard, which is an older standard, an XML document, which is great, but like the world is moving towards FHIR. There's a lot of complexity to the CDA standard and IHE standards. So like exposing FHIR, making FHIR a real thing, that's another improvement people want. And the other purposes of use. So we individual access got launched with TEFCA to allow the patient to identity proof strongly and then pull their information. That's really cool. I would love to see reciprocity for that use case. I'd love to see a stronger, contribute back your information as a patient. And also in future use cases. So things like payment, things like operations, not part of the launch. And so again, if you're not including the paved path for those, you're going to see abuse. You're going to see abuse by payers by either ignorance or by malice. You're going to see abuse by pharma and clinical trials. And so for every use case that is built on, I need to retrieve clinical data for something, you got to build the paved path and you got to build it quick, or we're going to see the same problems we have today. That's future. Like that's hard. That's a bunch of stakeholder wrangling. The one interesting decision, and I just mentioned it, is just the choice to use CDA over FHIR was a technical decision. It is really, and we'll see if it's right or wrong. There's a roadmap for FHIR, but to build a network is really hard. It's the hardest thing in any product management. It's the hardest thing for any company. It's the hardest thing for any country. And we've built one. We built Care Quality and Commonwealth aggregate network. We're building TEFCA V1 with CDA, and we're going to have to build another for FHIR and potentially three more for FHIR. There's actually three different distinct sort of network designs that are into the roadmap. And so like to build that out, to scale all those capabilities to hundreds and thousands of sub-participants, that's a lot of complexity. And so I don't know if it's right or wrong, but like definitely from like a difficulty, you're like, oh, let's amp it up to 11. And so I think that's an interesting choice at a technical front.
Yeah, no, and I think kind of raising that technical point makes good sense because you need to be aware of it. Believe it or not, we are already out of time. So I want to thank my guest, Brendan Keeler, for another great conversation today.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Yeah, and thank you to everyone listening. Keep the dialogue going and connect with me at hashtag HCDEJURE. I'm Matt Fisher. Until next time.